He, Jesus the Son, he is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. For by him all things were created, in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things were created through him and for him. And he is before all things, and in him all things hold together. And he is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, that in everything he might be preeminent. For in him all the fullness of God was pleased to dwell, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether on earth or in heaven, making peace by the blood of his cross. And you, who once were alienated and hostile in mind, doing evil deeds, he has now reconciled in his body of flesh by his death, in order to present you holy and blameless and above reproach before him. If indeed you continue in the faith, steadfast, stable, not shifting from the hope of the gospel that you heard, which has been proclaimed in all creation under heaven, and of which I, Paul, became a minister. Why do we shift in life? Why do we make a change? Stupid illustration, but what makes one goldfish think, no, not this goldfish bowl, I want to be in the other goldfish bowl? What makes us think, I know, the job I'm doing at the moment, no, that's not quite where it's at. I need to be in the new job. I need to jump bowls. I want better pay, better hours, better status. What makes you shift? What makes a person shift, move house? What made you move house most recently? What made you move country most recently, if you've done that? What made you change your friendship groups, change your church? What made you change religion? We're thinking, well, the water here is not working. I need that over there. What makes a shift? What would it take for you to shift your belief, if you're not a Christian here today, to become a Christian? What would that take? What would it take for you to move? I was chatting to someone the other day who had been calling herself a Christian a long time, but she said, I've come now to shift from treating Jesus as some nice optional extra or some nice get-out-of-hell-free card I keep in the back pocket to treating him now as my Lord and Savior who I want to live for. What would it take to make you make that kind of shift? In Colossians, Paul's worried about a shift happening the other way around, not shifting to Jesus, but the Colossians shifting from Jesus. So in verse 22b, Paul is saying, you'll be holy, blameless, above reproach before him if indeed you continue in the faith, stable and steadfast, not shifting from the hope of the gospel. He's worried they're going to shift. What might tempt someone to shift from Jesus? What might tempt you to shift from Jesus? Well, there are basic issues Christians will keep coming back to. Experience. We can't see Jesus. At many points, we can't sense Jesus. He doesn't feel real. Maybe he's not real. Experience. And issues of power. Jesus might feel very weak to us. Looks weak over evil and suffering in the world, in my life. He looks weak over sin. If he's powerful, why can't I stop that sin? Experience, power. The false teachers were tempting the Colossians, false teachers in Colossae, to shift from Jesus. They were saying, yes, okay, Jesus is great, but what you really need, if you really want experience, if you really want power, is to come with us. So in chapter 2, verse 18, you can glance down at it if you'd like. They're delighting in this experiential, spiritual worship of angels. They're going into great detail about what their sensual minds have seen. Jesus is great, but here's a bigger experience. Or they're saying, Jesus is great, but here's a path to greater power over sin. So in 2 verse 23, they're saying that the harsh treatment of the body could stop sin. Just put yourself under these rules, these regulations, and they are a real power against sin. But Paul's writing to say, don't shift. Continue in your faith, stable and steadfast, not shifting from the hope of the gospel. Why? Because Jesus has got it all. Paul in this passage wants to give us such a massive vision of God, a massive vision of Jesus, that we go, well, he's got it all. Why would I go elsewhere? All power, all the fullness of God, all forgiveness. Why would I go elsewhere? Here's Paul's first reason not to shift from Jesus, and they're printed there on the inside of your sheets. Jesus has all of God. So verse 15, Jesus is the image of God. Jesus is the image of the invisible God. When we lift up our phones and take our selfie, the image on our phone reveals what we're like. It's a picture. It reveals us. Jesus is the Father's walking, talking selfie, his image-bearing picture. Last week we saw verse 12 talk about God the Father, and verse 13 says he has a son. And again, that's an image-bearing idea. My sons look very similar to me. They carry my image. Jesus the Son bears the Father's image, not in appearance, but in characteristics. His divinity, his authority, his love, justice, compassion. Jesus is God. And there isn't more of God to get elsewhere. If you've got Jesus, you've got God. Because he's the fullness of God. So verse 19 says this, Jesus is the one in whom all the fullness of God was pleased to dwell. So in the Old Testament, God was pleased to dwell in two different buildings, the tabernacle and then the temple. And at the opening ceremony for those buildings, the glory cloud of God descends on these buildings. It's the place to meet God. It's the place to get your sin forgiven. It's the place to hear his word. But now, in the New Testament, all of God's fullness dwells in Jesus. He's the place to meet God. He's the place of forgiven sin. He's the word of the Father. If you wanted the full Ashes experience, cricket, extraordinarily exciting. 5 days wondering whether the pitch is going to bounce a little bit more or not, and whether it's going to end in a draw. If you want the full Ashes experience, you need to go to Edgbaston and go watch the game in Birmingham. If you want the full DJ family experience, you need to come round to our house, Nine Mast House Terrace. You need to watch the carnage unfold. If you want the full Jesus experience, if you want the full God experience, where do you need to go? Jesus. He's got the fullness of God. You see, if you've got Jesus, you've got God. So 1 verse 27 is going to say, Christ in you, that is the hope of glory. Or 3 verse 3 is going to say, you have died, your life is hidden with Christ in God. You can't get more of God elsewhere. You have been united with Christ, so you have been included in the fullness of God already. So Bethel Church can talk all they like about some kind of glory cloud appearing in their worship services. But that's to get stuck in the Old Testament. We can want more of God all we want, but all the fullness of God now lives in Jesus. And if you have Jesus, you have the fullness of God already. 24/7, 365. There isn't more of God to be accessed somewhere else. Our sense of God's spirit bearing witness with our spirit that we're children of God, as Romans 8 puts it, that waxes, that wanes. How Christian we feel goes up and down, but Christianity is not about what we feel we've got. It is about what Jesus has got and whether we've got Jesus. If we have him, we have all of God. Jesus has all of God. You can't go elsewhere for more. Second reason not to shift from Jesus. Jesus rules all of creation. So verse 15, Jesus is the image of God, the firstborn of all creation. This isn't saying at one point Jesus was born. Jesus is God, eternal. Instead, this is talking about Jesus' rule. So the firstborn son in the ancient Near East was the key son, the one who would get the bulk of the inheritance, the preeminent son. I'm the oldest son in our family. I keep telling my brother, this is how it should work today. Sadly, it doesn't. But this is about Jesus' rule, his supremacy. So here's a verse from Psalm 89. It told about a coming king, but God would make him the firstborn. And what does that mean? It means he would be the highest of the kings of the earth. So firstborn is about being supreme. So greater than Caesar, Solomon, Sheba, Cleopatra, Trump, Xi Jinping. To be firstborn means to be that supreme king. Why is Jesus ruler of all? Because he is creator of all. Verse 16, for by him all things were created, in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things were created through him. Jesus rules over Caesar, Trump, Xi Jinping because he created them. It seems the Colossians feared there were sort of other sources of power out there that they needed to fear. They felt they needed to, I don't know, unlock the power of these angels to help them. But why go to the created when you can go to the creator? Why fear the created if you've got the creator already? Because normally what you create, you control. So, you know, me and the kids, this is us after, probably half an hour's work. Do you think that took us? If you believe that's us, believe again, think again. But what we create, we go off crazy on our Duplo trains, or Brio trains, and what we create, we control. We get to tell the train, you go over here. The train doesn't get to turn around to me and go, oi, you, go get me a biscuit. Dan tries that, but I'm not to do that. What? No, the train can't do that to the creator. The creator controls the creation. Creators have control. That's true when we're building with the Brio raw materials. How much more true is it when Jesus builds not just the world, but the raw materials of the world too? But can't creations slip out of the control of their creators, like some crazed AI machine gone crazy out of humanity's control? No, this creation, Jesus is not just the creator, he is also the sustainer. So verse 17, he is before all things, and in him all things hold together. We've sung already in Psalm 104, creator, sustainer, you're robed in glory and splendor. The Psalm 104 is about God. This says it is about God the Son, Jesus. So what stops the universe spinning out of control right now? What stops you kind of collapsing into a heap of atoms on the floor? It is Jesus. The express permission of Jesus. He's not some divine watchmaker who set the universe going and then stands back. He's the glue that holds it together. I don't know here today, how seriously do you think you take Jesus? Are you kind of vaguely interested in this Christianity thing? Oh, it's a nice pick-me-up on a Sunday. Or is this your vision of Jesus? And do we get that that means because he gives us every second of our lives, he controls every second of our lives? He's creator, he's sustainer, he's owner of all. So end of verse 16, all things were created through him and for him. For him. Creators are owners. If you create something, you've got the right to copyright it. It's yours. It's for you because you created it. You get to benefit from it. Well, all creation was created by Jesus and is therefore owned by Jesus. So Jesus is not some useful in-app purchase for the app of life. He owns us. He owns our way. Creator, sustainer, owner. So Colossians, us, where else are you going to go? Who else are you going to serve? Who else are you going to live for? Going to live for a part of creation? Career, family, possessions, pleasure? Or are you going to live for the Creator? The one who creates these things. And where else are you going to go for help? Are you going to go to some angel for help, Colossians? A throne, a dominion, a power, an authority? What help can they give that the Maker can't give? Are we going to go to politicians, to bosses, to family? Are we going to go to creation for help, or are we going to go to the Creator? Jesus rules all creation. And Jesus' rule doesn't just extend to every place, it extends to every time. So Jesus rules the new creation. That's the point of 18 to 20, I think. So verse 18, and Jesus is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning, the firstborn from among the dead, that in everything he might be preeminent. So Jesus' resurrection is the beginning, the coming of a new creation. All this world's sin, death, decay, fallenness will be swept away. A new creation is coming. And Jesus is preeminent, supreme over that creation too. So he's preeminent over the church, God's people who will be raised with Jesus in this new creation. Verse 18, he is the head of the body, the church. The head rules the body. When my head says, go that way, my feet can't rebel and decide to go this way. The head rules the body, and the head is the most significant. Please don't, but you could cut off my arm, and I'd still be me. You can't cut off my head. The head is the most significant. Jesus is the head of the church. He's of utmost importance. Again, if we're looking for more than Jesus, where else are we going to go? Jesus is great, but I really need that kind of celebrity pastor or that church leader. That's mistaking one cell of the body for the head. Or Jesus' prayers to the Father for me are great, but what I really need to pray to are the kind of Catholic saints. Then they can add an extra 10% of help on top. Where else are we going to go? The one who rules, who is supreme. Go to him. He rules over the church and he rules over all things in the new creation. Verse 18, he is the beginning, the firstborn of the dead, that in everything he might be preeminent. No spiritual powers, no enemies, nothing will ever have supremacy over Jesus. Not then. You can ask me about verse 20 in Forum Time if you want to know what Jesus reconciling all things to himself means, but Jesus rules all things in the new creation. And that means no one else holds the future. So maybe you think my boss holds my future in his hands, or people, popularity, family, politicians, they hold my future. Whatever we trust to bless, whatever we fear can hurt, no, Jesus holds the future. Don't shift from Jesus. He has all of God. He rules everything, first creation, new creation. And last reason, Jesus gives us full access. Jesus gives us full access. That's why we should stick with Jesus. This is Glastonbury Music Festival from last couple of months ago. this year it was £248 to stand half a mile back from the stage, squinting at a big screen. But without a ticket, you weren't getting anywhere near. So they upped the security to keep you out. Now, verse 22 tells us the good news about access to God, but it only makes sense once we understand the bad news of verse 21. The alienation, no access, was what was deserved. So verse 21, and you, who once were alienated and hostile in mind, doing evil deeds. So Paul in chapter 3 lists some of those evil deeds. Verse 5 says sexual immorality, evil desire, covetousness. Verse 8 talks about anger, wrath, malice, slander, obscenity, lies. I can see myself in that list. Can you? Those evil deeds spring from hostile minds. Minds that say, no, God's not in charge, I am. Or, no, I will serve others when it suits me, but I will not make that the heartbeat. The world revolves around me. Evil deeds from hostile minds, leaving us, verse 21, alienated from God. Unable to enter. Sometimes in families there can be a serious breakdown. One side alienates themselves from the other. Communication is cut off. They don't see each other. And you can forget any inheritance coming their way. Well, this alienation is all our doing, and it destroys our future. So 3 verse 6 says that on account of these evil deeds, the wrath of God is coming. So there is a judgment day when every wrong will be righted, and where we will be seen to have been in the wrong, and where we experience the full consequence of that alienation. Alienation deserved. And yet, full access granted. Imagine instead of £248 for the Glastonbury ticket, one of the band just hands you for free their AAA backstage pass, access all areas. Verse 22, look what access Jesus grants. He is now reconciled in his body of flesh by his death. You. In order to present you holy and blameless and above reproach before him. We get to be holy and blameless and above reproach before him. Full access to God. No blemish keeping us back. And we get it for free. Paid for by Jesus. So in verse 22, he is now reconciled in his body of flesh by his death. He gives you his access pass, and he is treated as the one without it, the one who should be banished, alienated, excluded as he dies on the cross. So sinful people, they can't access a holy God. They can't come into the heart of the temple, the Holy of Holies. And yet now we can be holy, blameless, and able to appear before him. At Glastonbury, Stormzy sung Blinded by Your Grace, Part 2. Do you want me to sing it to you? I don't think I will. Lord, I've been broken, and although I'm not worthy, you fix me. Now I'm blinded by your grace. You came and saved me. 150,000 people at Glastonbury singing those words. Not sure how many believe them. Lord, I've been broken. Although I'm not worthy, you fixed me. Now I'm blinded by your grace. You came and saved me. Jesus can give us full access. Do you want that pass? No other access pass is required. So the Colossian false teachers were acting like there are different levels of Christianity. You know, yeah, you guys are Christians, but you're half a mile back from the stage. We're in the front row. Paul is saying, no, every Christian has got the free backstage pass, access all areas. You have Jesus, full access. So, don't shift from Jesus. Don't shift from Jesus. This is all yours. Verse 23, if indeed you continue in the faith, stable and steadfast, not shifting from the hope of the gospel that you heard. Don't trade in that backstage pass for anything. Nothing out there gets you more access. Everything else loses you access. Don't shift from Jesus. So the world's blessings seem so tangible, experienced. I need Jesus, but more, I need my job, my family, acceptance, pleasure, little less Jesus, a little more of that. No, don't shift from Jesus. We don't need a deeper experience in worship. I have Jesus. I have been marched right into the Holy of Holies already. I'm there 24/7. All the fullness of God dwells in Jesus, and if I trust Jesus, Jesus dwells in me. The deepest experience of God comes as we grasp with our head, our heart, our hands, what we already have in Christ. I don't need more power from elsewhere. I don't need special rules or techniques to beat sin. He has the power. It's already mine. I don't yet have the new creation. There is still a world of suffering, and it can hurt. But I do have Jesus, the one in verse 11 of chapter 1, who can strengthen me with all power according to his glorious might, for all endurance and patience with joy. We mustn't shift from Jesus. I was looking at a church website the other day, and I was reading a Christian article in a magazine the other day, and something was bugging me, and I realized in both of those things, the word Jesus didn't appear. The words God, Spirit, blessing, power appeared a lot. The word Jesus didn't. How much does a church talk about Jesus? It's a good way of working out what kind of a church you'd want to be part of. Don't shift from Jesus. And let me close with this. If you haven't come to Jesus yet, shift to Jesus. Become a Christian. This is my last sermon on a Sunday at the Barge, as one of the pastors of the Barge, which is a sadness. But let me use this moment to say, let me plead with you. If you haven't trusted in Jesus, if you come, you listen, but you haven't actually trusted in Jesus, shift to Jesus. He's your creator. He's your sustainer. He's your ruler. He's your owner. He's your rescuer, if only you'll let him. Will you take that access pass? And let me also plead with you, if you're someone who says, yeah, I am a Christian, but if you look at your life and you just see you're just paying lip service to Jesus, that your impression of Jesus doesn't match up to this Jesus here, Paul's Jesus, the real Jesus, make a change. Look into your life. Does your vision of Jesus, does how you live, how much you think of him, how much you want to live for him, how excited you are by what he's done, does it match up to this passage? And if it doesn't, ask yourself, have I actually come to this Jesus? If not, we'll shift to Jesus. Paul has tried to show us Christ. We need his Spirit to do that work, as we prayed in that song before. Show us Christ. Show us the one who has it all. Let me lead us in a prayer. Father, please give us a greater vision of Jesus wherever we are today. Please would we see him as our creator, our sustainer, our ruler, our owner, supreme of this creation, supreme of the new creation, and the one who gives us access, full, free, and total. In Jesus' name, amen.